If you are listening or watching this day of, it is Monday, December 25th. It is Christmas Day, so Merry Christmas if you celebrate it. If you don't, that's cool too. Happy holidays. I'm going off the cuff here. I don't want to do intros, but this is a rare occasion and very fitting. So these are my personal favorite moments of 2023. I hope you enjoy them. I recorded this the day before, so right now it's Sunday, 24th. It's Christmas Eve. I wanted to get the vibe right. So then I was thinking, like, what am I gonna do on Christmas? What should I do? So I was, out of curiosity, I just went online and then looked up what's open. So this is a list I made. Hopefully this helps you out. Just keep in mind that locations and times vary, so make sure to double check. But just so you know, if you want to do grocery shopping like a weirdo like myself, Albertsons is open. So you want to see me there, I will be there. For convenience stores, you got CVS, Rite Aid, Circle K, 7-Eleven, if you need that late night chocolate because you smoke too much weed. If you need some fast food biceps and it's emergency, McDonald's is open. For restaurants, we have IHOP, Denny's, Benihana. That's a good one. Or if you're horny and hungry at the same time, Hooters is also an option. What I'm personally doing, most likely I'll be going to Domino's. Domino's is open. So check it out. Hopefully that helps you. Kind of crazy with this year, because Christmas and New Year's fall on Monday. So obviously this came out on Christmas, and then we'll be dropping the next EP on January 1st, which is a Monday. And that will be Juan Brujo, the singer of Brujeria. I feel like that's a great way to open up the year. The lights went out. There was a mini earthquake. He was crying at some point. So it kind of encompasses everything that makes a great conversation. So that's something to look forward to. Real quick, I don't know if I said this here before. Have I? I'm not sure. But if I haven't, we are now dropping another episode a week. So me and our drummer Ernie will be ranting of every Thursday, it's looking like. So look out for that mid-January. And we are also, after waiting a long time and making sure this was perfect and to add some value, we are adding YouTube memberships. So it's called the heaviest tier of all time, because it really is. There's like fucking 10 things. I made sure there's like more than anyone else. So that'll be dropping early January as well. So yeah, that's it. Anyway, thank you for a sick year. We got through 2023. It's been a very insane year. I turned 38. I'm old, but not old at the same time. So anyway, hope you enjoy this. And until next time, thanks. Use EMG pickups because they help you get the heaviest tone possible. Head over to emgpickups.com and use my promo code HEAVY at checkout and get 15% off. And then once you write the heaviest song of all time, head over to distrokid.com/VIP/Garza and save 30% off your membership to get all your songs on all streaming platforms. And now to the heaviest podcast of all time.
When we did the Slayer tour, we were nervous that we were going to get like booed off stage, or people were going to chant Slayer, because that's back in the day when you opened up for Slayer, it was hard, because everybody was like, you know, the whole crowd, well, you're playing like Slayer, like, you know, just get the fuck off. Yep. We want to see Slayer.
Yeah,
that's pretty much how it was. So we were nervous, and we came out and we were like, whoa, nobody said nothing. Everybody loved it.
Nothing.
I was surprised. Not one Slayer chant, nothing. We were surprised how many people were there for us, and it was great.
Yeah, but Fear Factory's heavy, dude. Heavy.
Yeah, it was, you know, during the Shock Obsolete era. Come on. So, yeah, it was.
Was that, you know what, I actually never asked
but
you.
But still, you know, I mean, I've seen other bands open up for Slayer, and they just got killed.
Like which ones?
I don't want to mention names. Well, actually, I'll tell you one. System of a Down. They opened up for Slayer, and that was when they were still wearing their makeup and stuff, and they got a lot of Slayer chants.
Was the first record already out yet or no?
I'm sorry?
Was the first record already out yet or no?
Yes.
It was out.
Their System of a Down record? Yeah.
Self-titled, right?
Self-titled. Yeah, the first one, whatever it was called.
I guess, yeah, that wouldn't really go well with the Slayer crowd, I guess, you know?
Yeah, it's just it wasn't just them. It was other bands, too. It happened to a lot of bands. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but you guys are heavy, though.
Yeah, we managed to make it work, and it was a great time touring with those guys. Super cool. Everybody was super sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you lay down like a foundation.
It's kind of weird saying super sweet about Slayer, right?
Yeah. Super sweet guys.
But they were just nice. They were just super nice guys, man. Very accommodating.
A lot of Jaeger?
A lot of Heineken. They drank a lot of Heineken. And Tom Reyes smoked a lot of weed, so he was on our bus every day smoking weed.
What was the best piece of advice that Dave gave you?
Network and always try to be in control of your stuff. Mm. But he said network. That was the first thing, network.
Network.
So that's what I did. I went out and networked, went to concerts, started meeting musicians, meeting people who work at record companies, just started hosting parties at my apartment, so inviting these people, and eventually the people started coming. And it was great, just hanging out, knowing all the drug dealers around.
That's important.
Exactly, for the people who like to do drugs. Yes, exactly. I'm not
that smart.
I'm not into that, but
that is crazy.
I help facilitate that in some ways, right? And I just gave everybody a place to hang out and party and have a good time.
Bands, anyone that might be a part of the
music industry, exactly. There was actually, it got to the point where like there would be a band that would be coming into town. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a couple of guys from bands would come into town because they had to do maybe publicity, you know, a publicity tour, you know. They had to come into L.A. for interviews and stuff like that. So the record company people were always like, well, what do? We got these two guys from Paradise Lost. What do we? Or we got these couple of guys from Carcass. Mm-hmm. What do we do? Like, how do we entertain them? Bring it to my house. So I was meeting the guys from Carcass, Paradise Lost, Napalm Death. I mean, numerous of bands.
Early 90s.
Fuck. And late 80s, early 90s. Devin Townsend, when he was in Steve Vai's band, just all kinds of people coming over to my apartment. Shannon Hoon from Blind Melon, everybody from Slayer, you know, Sepultura, Napalm Death, everybody was at my apartment at one point.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Just partying, having a good time. And I would be the DJ.
What would you play?
Just everything. Everything from what was popular at the time. Even if it was like, I mean, everything from like early, like stuff that was coming out of the Manchester scene. I didn't play metal because you had metal guys. They don't always want to hear metal. They just want to hear something different.
Yeah.
So I would play different stuff. That was cool.
Yeah.
That was it.
That is so smart, dude. Just have people come by, and you have like this endless knowledge and inspiration around you.
Yeah, and you know? So you know that's what Dave was saying. It's a network, and so that's what I was like, okay, network. That's how I did it.
I want to talk about your record, Reign Supreme. And that's like that's your seventh record, second with Trey. I mean, Sean, you've been in a band for like a minute. Was there a discussion? Because it really sounded like you guys flipped the switch and really, okay, this is Diabetes. Like, was there like a talk about it, or you just naturally all right, let's just get in the room and start jamming?
Well, that was kind of an interesting part of my life. And I had gotten, not proud to say it, but I got a DUI. I started fucking up too hard on drinking and other things. And I got caught, you know? So I had, I went sober for like a year, and that's when that album was written. And I was so hyper focused on that record. It was like, because, you know, I wanted to drink, I wanted to fuck up, I wanted to do things, but I really channeled everything into that album and really was focused on it, man. I was just, yeah. So, yeah, that's why it's a little bit better than some of the other ones, you know, just like really put a lot of time and thought into it, and just I was facing my demons, you know, with all that, you know, and music was my outlet. So the album came out really well, I think, because of that, you know.
Wow.
So I was stone sober, you know, right now. What you know? The fuck? I was drinking a lot of the Monster stuff. I remember that.
That's what happens when we get, you know what? All of a sudden, I got Monster and coffee now.
I was so wired. And this dude, I was doing pre-pro with Darren Morris. You know, we would just like constantly just be at it. I would spend a night at his house, you know, be jamming on shit, then wake up the next day and fucking back at it. And just, he helped a lot with me with a lot of his ideas as well. But yeah, that was like a, you know, now I'm back to smoking weed again and things like that, but drink a little bit, but I'm not out of hand. I had to put myself in check.
Out of hand.
I'll be honest. I was doing a little bit of the fucking pills and all that stupid shit.
Man.
Because it was easy. I was doing Xanax on the road.
Oh, no.
Had downtime and, you know, started falling into that trap a little bit. And then I got busted. And it was kind of good I got busted because it could have saved my life. You know, who knows, you know. But
In a weird way, that record kind of did save your life, you know.
It did, man. That's, yeah.
So that record came out in 2012. So what year did you get sober?
Yeah, around that time. It was about 2010, 2011, you know, something like that. Yep. You know, so, yeah.
What change did you guys see? John has got a DUI. He's sober and we're writing writing sick tunes now. You know, did the songs feel like, oh, this is a little bit different?
I kind of felt like a continuation, but a more focused continuation of Descend.
Yeah, really? That's me too.
To me, Descend was a bit of a change in the sound, a little bit. Mm-hmm. There were elements that were not present in previous albums.
I think it was the studio also.
And studio stuff, but least from me and Sean's perspective, like, I considered it more, and John laid it out, you know, he was definitely more focused. He was sequestered with Darren constantly. Yeah. And like, they were just churning out demo.
I think it was Steve Wright's studio we went to. It was Descend was the first album with him.
Oh.
And then Rain is the second album with him.
Interesting.
And it got a lot better. He knew exactly what we wanted now. He knew the three of us, our personalities, what, you know, how to push each one of us. And, you know, we like something totally different. It's pretty funny. You know, he calls me names.
Of course.
Pisses me off.
Right. Makes you piss. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. That helps me for some reason.
Yeah.
Right. It's just funny where, and then everything got better as far as like tones for everything all the way across the board, I think, with him. Because he knew what we wanted and it got better, I think. So that's the main thing I always notice, you know, from that one album to the next. That was with him, yeah.
So let's just see what happens when we do this again, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's crazy with a different mindset. You could do the same thing and have a totally different outcome just by a switch or doing something like slightly different.
Yeah, and he was not a death metal guy either, you know? It's not like he had
really
a bunch of death metal bands recording with him, no. It was what's he like? Gospel, rock,
does everything,
right?
Everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of bands don't do that. Like, you know, you track your record with someone that doesn't necessarily do metal all the time.
Yeah.
And it's how you kind of get like that unexplainable something that's like different that will like set your record apart, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. I didn't know it was the same guy.
Yeah, and then, you know, Steve, it got better and better. So like the last album we just did, the newest one that's not out yet, we record it with him, but we have Mark Lewis was mixing it or whatever.
Mm.
So we added something different on the newest album, but the three before were all with Steve at his studio.
Sick.
Yeah.
Well, 3.5. We did the EP there.
Oh yeah, yeah, the EP also. Yeah. Right.
Wait, who mixed Rain?
Steve Wright.
Steve Wright. So produced, mixed. Okay, sick.
Yeah.
It's pretty special when they kind of do all of it, and it's kind of still have that like the fresh year. It's hard to hit.
Yeah,
you know, it's I still have a fresh year out there. You know, hanging out with Dying Fetus for about 2 months, being
right,
pissed off.
Right,
you know, it's crazy. It's special, man.
Yeah,
and what a crazy time in your career, because I mean that shit comes out. I mean, what was it like? Like received well, like right out of the gates.
those two albums were the first times we like got the Heat Seekers on, like started tracking on, at least, I don't know, I mean, you guys tell me, like we started tracking on Billboard, but I also think that had to do a lot with the way the industry had changed at the time. You know, the internet was a little bit more, downloading was a little bit more popular. You know, so you know, you can sell fewer CDs and track, you know.
Gaza, in this time, bruv, I've got a few things to ask you about.
Yeah.
Okay. We can switch this up for a second.
Yeah, you can switch it up. This is one of the only places that people can go. There's nothing you can ask me. Sick. Or it's not, there's anything can be said. I don't care.
Okay, you ready? So I heard 1994, you was playing for the Giants.
I was.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you support the Giants? I heard you're a big fan. I heard you're a big fucking fan, dude.
No.
Next one. I heard you like to hide Reese's in your bandwagon bunk, dude.
What are you talking
about? Hey, dude, don't worry about my source. I'm just saying, I heard that you like to hide Reese's in your bandwagon bunk, dude. True or not? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes? I also heard that the suspension wasn't too good on the bandwagon and you flew out of that with a bit of speed.
Yes.
And your back's okay?
It's better now.
Yeah? It's better?
Yeah, it's better.
That's it. That's all I got. That's all I got, dude.
Appreciate the...
Everybody loving it. Oh, they feel sorry.
Oh, man. I fucking fell out of our bunk and I sprained my big toe.
Fucking
hell. Wait, you fell out of the bunk and sprained your big toe?
Yeah.
On what?
I fell out. I don't fucking know.
But you, like, you're laying down. Like, how's your toe involved?
And then, like, I went down. I hit my shoulder on the table. I don't know how things got connected. I don't know. And I had this big old fucking bruise. It was like that.
Damn.
And I had melted chocolate underneath my pillows. It's a weird thing.
Chocolate under the pillows? Well, dude, great. Bandwagon sounds better watch sick out, because there's a lawsuit coming for that one.
What I do appreciate is... your four rules of being a man.
Be careful. Be careful with this shit.
Oh, my goodness.
Is the camera still rolling?
Just so when you think about this stuff, it's just like, you know what? I'm going to say it out loud. Because people, Alex, and I don't really think you're real. Maybe I'll help you realize this. Yeah. Some people wish they can say that.
Yeah. And this is crazy.
But you actually said it. And not only did you actually say it, Jack supported you.
Yeah. For me, it's crazy. I mean, for me, it's crazy. Like, nowadays, a lot of people in America just scared to say a simple fucking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a reason why they're scared. And right now, I understand why. But I don't give a shit. I will say it anyway. You know what I mean?
What was the backlash like? I don't think people can really fathom what it is actually like when the internet comes after you.
What do you mean?
Was there a backlash? You have a whole community attacking you?
Attack comments or?
Yeah, they start to send me the message in my DM and comments, a lot of comments, like 8,000 fucking comments. It's crazy. And I don't have a problem with LGBT people, like transgenders, gay people, all this shit. I have problems with crazy people. You know what I mean? And if you, I am crazy, but I realize that I have a problem, like mental problem and all this shit, and I work on that shit, you know?
Yes.
And sometimes I'm wrong, and I realize that. I accept that, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't realize that, and they try to push that on another people, and they think they're right, but they're not, you know? And you have to calm down and humble yourself and realize that a lot of people has a very different opinion. But for example, when I was young, I was vegan, right? For 6 years, I was vegan. And I was like, everybody have to stop eat meat, actually, because it's fucking bad.
You were one of them, huh?
Right.
Yes.
And right now, a lot of people in the LGBT community, they think that way. You have to appreciate that. You have to respect that. You have to fucking do that. You don't have to tell that, or you cannot say that. Fuck you. I'm going to say whatever I want. Because if it hurts your feelings, I don't give a shit. Because this is a fucking real world. Welcome.
This like, is the real world.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's like everything you're saying, nothing is actually like offensive or violent. It's like,
or disrespectful.
There's right? no disrespect.
And this is crazy. Yeah. This is, this like realizing that makes me like crazy. You know what I mean? It's like, so because it's too far. It goes too far.
And but people entertain it. This is the other thing is I think with a lot of the stuff of people being canceled, most of the time it's people canceling themselves, you know, because once they smell blood, once you start apologizing, but you don't mean it. For example, the situation with CJ, you know, the band pushed him to make this apology video. And
Diary's
this.
Murder?
Yeah, from Diary's Murder. It's like you, it never, it didn't work. People smelled blood and it just split it more, you know?
I mean, for me, that old dramas inside the bands and all this shit, they just, This is their personal stuff, actually. And I understand that if you have that band, like, and make yourself not private anymore and make your real, like, individual life, you showing
like
in, Instagram, public. You have to explain some shit to your fans, right? On another side. But you never know what's happening exactly inside the band. And you start to judge immediately, like, oh, you, like, you fire him, you bad, and all this shit. But you don't know a lot of small things happening inside the band, right? And maybe they, like, argue a lot and fighting a lot, and they has their own truths, and the CJ has his own truths. And this is normal. And I call it drama. I don't want to be a part of any drama, you know? This is your personal deal and stuff, you know? Personal business. But it goes too far with the fans. Fans start to judge. Yeah. Fans start to go and see your underwear, you know? I want to see your underwear. What is the color, you know? This is my underwear, dude. This is just for me and my wife, just, or something.
Or something. For me, my wife, and my dog. Is
yes.
And
And that's I believe that people judge another people, but they don't see in the mirror and look at yourself, you know? Because everything you talk about that person, maybe you have this. But maybe
it's a
you
reflection.
Maybe you don't understand this, or you don't want to understand this, you know?
Yeah, there is a, which I think deep down, even like the cancel culture side of things, whatever community or race you wanted to throw out, and let's throw it all into one pot.
Right.
I think deep down, they everybody, humans truly want what you're doing. It's a stand your ground. When you do like, when you do the backpedaling, it's, hey, this is fucking deathcore, dude. This was supposed to be dangerous.
Rock.
Say what the fuck we want.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
People deep down, they might get pissed at you for like a minute, or maybe what CJ did was a little bit out of control is fine.
Yeah.
But the whole backpedaling, that's not what this music is about. And I think deep down, people want you to stand your ground. Even even if you're, if it's your truth, sure, but people don't want you to backpedal.
Yes.
What he say, CJ? He said something like this lady or whatever.
Yeah, he shared
like
a story.
From like some right wing dude or something about something to do with a woman.
But what exactly he said? Like this lady deserved
to be burned.
To be burned. You really think that he wish he this lady death or something? He's just a normal dude, you know. And sometimes when we talking together, we talking shit. And it's just, okay.
Yeah,
we're
it's
all
fine.
Talking shit, but it's not serious, actually, you know? And when it goes serious, we bang serious, you know? But when you're talking shit, you're talking shit, right? And it's not about you really that guy, you know? But that people, like, oh, you really said that? Oh my God. Like, you're fucking sane. You're a God or you're Jesus Christ. No, you're worse. Yeah. Maybe you, like, worse than fucking CJ, right? Who are you to judge?
Exactly.
Stop it. Please stop it.
But as soon
take it easy.
As soon as you let them take control of that,
you're fucked.
This is where you're fucked, because now no one will be on your side.
On another side, if you have like big fan base, fucking millions and thousands of followers, you have to fucking control yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
Think before you say something, right?
You're right. There is a proper filter, but you're not filtering yourself.
Yes.
You have a responsibility.
You do.
Yeah. And yeah, you have to take this responsibility. So I took this responsibility when I had the fucking Black Santa 2 and all that shit, you know? I took this responsibility. And like when the people cancel me, it's fine because I took this responsibility. And I was young and I was stupid or maybe some shit, but it's not excuses for me.
Yeah.
And it is in the past and I took it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's okay. And I don't blame people. I understand people. I understand this reaction. It's just a normal reaction, right?
Yeah.
But on another side, like, people have to, like, be more kind to each other. You know what I mean? General, especially in music industry or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe.
And people can actually change. This is the other thing. Like, we have a justice system that if you do time in prison, for example, and you come out, you know, you get another chance at life, you know, you serve your time.
People
fucked
up.
But in the eye of the public is like, people do change. Like, maybe I wonder how many people that judge what they were doing when they were 15, that if they were now going to be judged for the rest of their lives, you know, you deserve to change as a man and
a
woman and grow as a person.
You have to change.
You know?
You're growing. You have to change. You have
But people don't accept that. Like, you always see comedians that maybe get a new job, like on a TV show, and people find a tweet from 10 years ago or whatever.
It's so unfair.
Yeah.
It just hates this.
It's fucking unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you think what cancel culture actually is, it's like humans in general, I mean, are very hypocritical creatures.
Oh, yeah.
We are very hypocritical.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah.
Double standards and stuff.
It makes no sense. Okay. So let's say you're right. This man and woman, non-binary, or whatever we want to say, is, let's say they did like this tweet. Okay, great. Right. They're a horrible person, cancel it. But if you think about what canceling is, you're trying to basically take their livelihood away, their money away. You want them to not pay rent.
Suffer. Like, you have to suffer.
You want their cat, their dog, and not have food.
You don't deserve any of happiness in your life.
Yeah.
That is actually
aggressive.
More
brutal, right?
That is more of a bad person.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It makes no sense to
this
try
This is what
to,
I'm talking about. Look at your fucking mirror. What are you doing with his life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, calm down. Jesus Christ,
please.
It makes
no sense.
But it's power.
It is.
Because when it goes this crazy and it's like a mob mentality, there is a power to it.
The another thing, like, they think they can judge. Who are they to judge, you know? Mm-hmm. And if people fucked up, okay, we have the laws, we have the fucking that system, and if you break the fucking rules, you go to the prison or some shit. But they think they can judge, and they think they can make their rules. If you fucked up, now we're talking. Let's go, baby. You fucking cancel, right?
Yeah.
You don't have anything
right
People
get excited.
We have power.
Like, wow, what's going on now, you know? And everyone keeps up and is, you know, the talk. But 1 week later is something else, you know? That's the other thing as well. It's like you just
people
need this
love
quick,
drama.
Yeah, this quick fix of reality TV in front of your eyes and you get to play a part in it by commenting shit or whatever. And your voice is heard because you can make a new account and comment as much as you fucking want, you know?
Right now, I see only fucking drama.
Is it crazy to be in the position that we're in where, like, now it's like, when you hear a new band, you get stoked for them, and you want to help them, as opposed to hearing, like, the new Suey with me hearing a new Woodchapel, like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah. It's like, what are they got up their sleeve now, you know?
It's so different now, and I think where, me personally, I want to open up the discussion where I think, like, Whitechapel and Suey really fucked up where there's like this bubbling up time and we should have toured together and we didn't. And we toured together, but it was too late. And I think both sides had massive egos.
Yeah.
And I think
100%.
And we really didn't capitalize or really hone in on that first wave when, like, we were the bands that should have been touring together.
We were too worried about who was going to play over who versus just doing the fucking tour.
It was stupid. Know?
Well, because when you're younger, you do. I mean, your ego gets the best of you. I mean, like, when you're young and you're getting that kind of attention, like, and you're in your early 20s, mid 20s, like, you're going to have like a little bit of pride and ego and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we're older now, and it's just like.
And once you get over 30, all those feelings start to go away. So.
The don't give a fuck meter is off the charts when you're older. You know, like you're just like, you're just like, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're just, I don't know, you just mellow out and you stop caring about shit so much. You know what I mean? Like, you just, it's weird. It's true. All it sucks, what our man. Parents said, you know, like, you know, you're going to get older, you're going to change. Like, nah,
they're no, all change. Not, yeah. I'm always be pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything they said was right, you know.
Well, hell, even Vincent from Acacia Strain, dude, he's like changed man. He's like different guy now. He's like
big old softy.
Super positive guy now. And like, wow. He was like one of the most like negative people ever. And like, he's like, you know, being like positive now. And it's just like, yeah, you just get older and life happens and shit changes. And I think it's more or less just getting older. Like, when you get older, just there's, I can't explain it. Just something happens and you just care about completely different things than you did when you were younger.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's hard to keep up with all these, you know, young fucking metal and deathcore bands and stuff, because it's just back then when you have that young rage and hatred and drive, it's so easy to just let that brutality flow out of your fucking fingers. But as you get older, man, it just gets hard to fucking tap into that fucking inspiration, you know, for brutality. It's just like, it's like, well, actually, Phil sounds pretty good singing. Maybe we should just like chill out a little bit.
Yeah. And then it's just like, and then night in and night out of like screaming, it's just like, I know that, like, you know, there's a lot of information out, like, you know, with the way the internet is now, there's so much information out now. But like, I still feel, no matter how safe you are with like vocals, doing it night in and night out for years, you're still
some gonna, point you're gonna hit.
You're
a wall,
still gonna fuck something up. Like, it's still gonna over time wear you down. And like, I mean, I could be wrong, but like, I think, you know, just with anything, like, it, when you get older, your joints get weaker, your bones aren't as strong, you know. It's just like, and this is just another part of your anatomy, and like, doing it night in and night out for month and a half, 2 months straight, and then going back home and then recording an album, still doing it, practicing, you know, just over time, like, your voice is gonna get fucking worn out, no matter how much technique or practice or, you know, warming up you do, like, it's gonna wear down over time, you know, because that's just what we do. We start, as soon as we're born, we start dying, you know. Like,
true,
it just is what it is.
No, it's true, man. And so I mean, I'm glad we got that out of the way. And also, I had a very prolonged ego because, I mean, when we got Eddie, it was kind of like a do over, trying to
of course.
But man, it sucks that we.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, we could have tapped into it.
But blew up. But I mean,
you say, we did end up doing it eventually. Yeah. We did that co-headliner, and it was good. But like you said, I don't think it was as good as if we did it back when,
dude, when we were both shit was blowing up. God, we're idiots.
Yeah.
And now we get
like
older,
basically like 2010. Yeah, like 2010 or so, around in there. If we would have done it back then,
both trying to win, and we both lost.
Yeah.
It's weird how that turned out.
So all you young bands, take note of that.
For real, dude. Yeah. It just reminds me of like, you know, just something like Tyson and Holyfield, you know, like, you know, when they're younger, they just fucking hate each other. They just want to beat each other. And then they're old men. They're just like shaking hands, hugging, you know. It's just like, it's just that's how it is. Like, when you're younger, you just have this, because everybody in some way is competitive in some way.
Of course.
And like, you know, you want to be, you want to be top. You want to be the best. And like, that's a subjective thing. It's not an objective reality, you know.
It's true.
It's just, no matter how big you're perceived or whatever, doesn't mean you're the best, you know. Like, it doesn't matter if this band's getting paid more than you, doesn't mean that they're better than you, you know. Like, it's just, it's all subjective. Music is 100%, 110% subjective, you know? And you start to realize that when you get older.
And I'm unironically wearing the sort of today I noticed the quintessential brutal death metal uniform.
That is the uniform. Camo shorts, banana pouch.
The banana pouch. You want to talk about this for a second?
Okay, let's do it.
I don't.
Okay, let's
do it. I'm going to be this. What do you think's in here?
About gun to my head. Quarters and panties.
No, but it's roughly the same size. God, I shouldn't be doing this. This is good. People are gonna think this is gross. What do you think that is?
What the fuck is that?
This is called Aculoclean.
What are we talking about right now? What is that?
You take a bottle of water and you put this on top, put this in there.
Yeah.
It's a portable bidet. Do you have a...
Why do you have a portable... Why do you always carry it with you?
You've toured?
Yeah.
You just live with the chafing on your butthole?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, dude. No way. I can't. I can't do it. You would think it would get all poopy and gross and stuff, but it doesn't. Look, okay. He's sitting there looking at me like, dude, this is disgusting.
This look is fucking...
Culoclean, $8.99 on Amazon. And I, you okay. know, you wash it every time just in case, just to be safe.
Okay.
And it worked out
it's
great.
It's a thing.
Culoclean. $8.99. You get two for $15.
What's even more bizarre, Travis, is that you actually look for this. You actually look for this thing.
Dude, a week before I leave.
What happened to you?
I had been thinking to myself, 48 years old, trying to keep up doing this bullshit.
You don't got to clean your butt to keep up with the fucking metal scene, man.
You do. When you're walking around going, oh, fuck. Dude, you go to Japan once. I went to Japan, played the tour, and came back. I think we were home for like 3 hours. Yeah. I was already at Home Depot buying a bidet. So I got used to having bidets. And now I just, maybe I, the natural calluses that come from.
Now there's calluses.
Scraping your butthole with paper.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. This is like obviously the best way to do it.
Actually, to your credit, I have heard that bidets they feel amazing.
Well, yeah.
That's what I've heard. I have never, ever tried it.
Yeah. This country prides itself on being this, you know. First world paradise or some shit, but we're all walking around with
dirty assholes,
poopy buttholes, man.
Yeah,
it's disgusting.
But not you though.
No, I rock the Culoclean. I have what do you call them, bidets at home. So,
and you have backups,
both toilets too. And now I have this you know.
You're like, okay, what am I going to put this thing in? Oh, you know, a banana pouch.
It's come on, it's obvious.
And I'm going to write our. Second record Broke. Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, so you know, Broke was produced by Machine, who went on to like do all Lamb of God's records, right? So that was interesting because that was our first time working in the digital world, you know, where before everything was tape, you know, and Machine, like he came from the hip hop world and then entered into the rock world, but what he would do was. We would create loops with Machine, you know. That was the first record where, dude, we would just take a chorus and then we would find the most tightest loop of the chorus and then that would be the chorus and just copy it. That was the first time we ever did that shit, you know. Or here's a dope verse, copy it. Not like, hey, let's play all through the song like a real band. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like Machine brought that to us where it was like, cut and paste, and that really gave like in my opinion, a hypnotic effect to the loops and stuff because they were just like dance music, you know, just always the same, just hitting you constantly right on point. But so you know, Broke, we did the first record and it was 5 years between the first and second record. We were kind of all salty about it and we were broke, you know. We signed $1 million record deal. And the money had run out. And so here we are back in Huntington and working on some new shit. Of course, in those days, I used to write a lot of lyrics on the road, too. So
how did you find time for that?
I don't know, dude. I would just come up with shit. At the same time, when I'm thinking of Broke, there was a lot of instances where I would write the song the night before.
Really?
So it was like, but there was some shit I had from the road. And then, but when I'd hear how they crafted the track, then sometimes I'd have to do a rewrite and I would just like sit in the hotel in Jersey, which is where we recorded Broke, and just write the song the night before I was going to record, you know, because I had the freshest music of what was done, you know, and just vibe to that.
Was there any pressure with that at all?
There was no pressure on Broke. The pressure came on the next record, which where we all kind of fell apart because the label, the guy who signed us left, and so my new A&R guy I didn't get along with him at all. Mm-hmm. I don't think he even liked Ted P.E. And so he would come to my hotel room every night and go over word for word what my lyrics were and be like, I don't get this. This doesn't make sense. Yeah, dude. It was hideous.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
Right. So that was the third record. And then, you know, we left that label.
So it sounds like you guys are all in like a good headspace with the...
With Broke, yeah. That was kind of before, you know, obviously, or not so obvious, I had a falling out with Wes after Broke. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that turned into a falling out with the drummer as well. They're mm-hmm. kind of connected, but not mm-hmm. really, but kind of. Yeah, you know, it's that same old cliched story of a band that somehow doesn't get along, you know, when you're on the right path, you know.
What were the similarities between you and Wes with the four track and then to the second record? Are you guys still making Fool and then...
Okay, well, yeah, we were still working really tight on the second record, just like, oh, man. We had come up, right? The label had bought us like a digital multi-recorder. I think it was like 16 track.
And 16 tracks? Oh, bro. You guys made it.
And we would hang out all the time. And that's what brought Broke together. In contrast to after that, then I couldn't get him in the room with me at all. He was having problems. We were both having problems. Like, so for the third record, it's like we were never in the same room at the same time. It was gnarly, dude. Yeah.
It's always unfortunate, man.
Yeah, it is. But
so what were you thinking? Like when you hear that the riff for like Bartender or like Killing Time, like what were you feeling and thinking?
Okay. Well, Bartender is like that one. You know, there's a guy by the name of Brian mm-hmm. who was in a band with Jonathan Davis before Korn, like, and it was called like Sex Art Cult. Yeah. And so this kid his name was Brian, or no, was it Dennis the Menace? That was his name, Dennis. Okay, so he was a bass player with Jonathan Davis. When I was writing Bartender, Dennis would come down to the studio and he gave me some really good tips.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He'd be like, you need to get into the hook quick, or your verse is too long, or do this here. So I just bring that up because it's like yesterday when I remember Bartender was done musically and I'm just sitting in the studio working on the vocals. And you know what? It was kind of effortless, you know, in terms of just kind of came out and had a certain vibe. And, you know, it was just a song about me clubbing, which is what I was doing at the time, you know. And so that whole record just came together pretty effortlessly, in my opinion. You know, me and Wes working on tracks, getting a whole demo, then going to Jersey, recording those demos with the band, doing the vocals, just... No worries.
Did you have any experience with singing prior to that?
No.
That day, nothing.
No, I had experience in oration, speaking like spoken poetry, spoken word pieces, things like that. Mm-hmm. But no, I didn't sing in the choir, or I wasn't in any other bands before this or anything. It just happens.
Did you do the spoken word poetry on stage? Before that?
In little tiny, like, you know, clubs and stuff like that. But no, you know, nothing of substance, really. The first time I ever did anything big with spoken word was when I was on Deaf Poetry on HBO. Mm-hmm. And that was my first time ever. And at that time, like, spoken poetry was a big thing. And like, mm-hmm. comedians do, they do, like, the circuits. And so... I had one spoken word artist come up to me and he said, so what, you know, I've never seen you on the circuit before. What clubs have you played? And I said, I'm a musician. This is my first one. He goes, so you're doing, your first one is HBO Deaf Poetry. So you just play the Super Bowl without ever playing a game before? And I said, well, I do this on stage in my shows. So I guess, and they were just they did a prayer circle, which, you know, I don't really care about, but they didn't invite me, which was like, okay, I see you guys are tribalistic. Yeah, sure, all right. So I had this I was on Capitol Records at the time, and they had sent down somebody from publicity, and the guy saw it and he got really offended. So he said, come here, Otep, come here, come here. He's like, play along. And he grabs my hands and he's like, oh, Dark Lord Satan, we pray to you, you know, and then everybody in the room was like, oh my God, she's a Satanist. And I'm like, you know, just to scare them. And, sick. And you know, yeah, it was pretty cool. I was like, a label guy's doing this? Well, all right. But prior to that, no, I'd been on stages before. I spoke at, like, you know, rallies and did spoken word stuff and did ciphers, like, with hip hop and, you know, battle ciphers, stuff like that, little things.
Because that is, that just looks terrifying. It's only you. Like, there's no wall to hide behind. Like, you don't get a band behind you. You don't got nothing.
It is because, one, they only give you, I think, 2 minutes and 33 seconds but there's no clock. There's no clock provided. So Mos Def was the host, and Mos Def, if a lot of people don't know, he's this, like, legendary hip-hop artist, legendary lyricist, and he's one of my favorite inspirations, and he was the host. So I got to stand in the wings with him, and I'm just thinking, like, oh God, don't mess up. Mos Def is here. Mos Def is here.
Don't mess up.
Don't screw up. And
I still do that.
me too. Yeah, I know. Me too. But it's a little more intimidating, like, when you're, you know, the guy's there,
yeah,
right?
Right there.
So he's standing there, and then I walk out. They introduce me. I come out, and it's quiet as a church. And the stage is only about 8 inches off the ground. So, and the crowd goes around you. So you go way out to the front of the stage, but you got people behind you, watching your back, watching your sides, watching your front, people up there, and it's just quiet. Right? And then they got the boom cameras that come down, and they've got, you know, and somebody's working that, and they've got the other cameras all in your face, and you just got to get your poem in as quick as possible. And when I started, again, like, there was, like, a few giggles. To this day, as long as Deaf Poetry was on air, I was the only rock artist to ever transfer over into that world. I'm very proud of that. But when, so there's most, that's like
Cosby
me, like,
walks off.
I'm like slapping Mos Def's hand, and he's like trying to whisper something in my ear, but I'm so like I'm full of adrenaline at that point.
What do you say?
He said, that was so real. And then I was like, thanks, man. And I just, like, ran off stage as fast as I could. But like I said, I walk out, it's quiet, and it's like, there's a few giggles and stuff in the audience, you know, and they're like, who's this girl, you know, this, wearing this, you know, skeleton hoodie or whatever. And I come out and I start doing this thing, and it's autobiographical. I mean, it's what I say in that poem actually happened in my family. And everybody was still kind of like, because I start off and I'm doing, like, this little rap. You have 7 more seconds to decipher your life before my tongue becomes a knife and your brain gets sliced. And everybody's kind of like, what is that? What is that? And then I get to the point where I talk about, like, you know, I was born at 7 months. I was born 2 months premature, 3 pounds, 4 ounces. And then I show why is because my protein donor of the biological side tried to abort me, punched my mother three or four times in the stomach while she was 7 months pregnant. So I illustrate that on stage, and you can see I'm about to do it. And the microphone is here, so I hit myself so hard, you hear a boom, 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 and then it's like gasps in the audience.
This is intense.
Yeah. Welcome to my life, yeah. So there's gasps in the audience. And then I can feel the tension lower, and I finish everything, and everybody's applauding. Mos Def comes out, and he's like, that's so real. And they stop it on this video. They stop it before he finished what he was saying. He was talking to the audience, like, that was so real. And he actually had a tear in his eye. And I was surprised because I didn't think. And, like, Black Thought from The Roots was on that show that night, and he came up to me afterwards as well. And, again, he's a lyricist that I'm really fond of, and he came up and he was just like, before the show, wouldn't talk to me. After the show, he's giving me pounds and dap and everything. And so then all the poets were clapping, and before they were very standoffish. And It was an amazing experience. That was really one of the highlights of my career. And I did it. It was in New York City, and I had a show that night. So I went over to do the show. They brought a car. I went over, did the show, then drove back and did my show that night.
Show that night.
Yeah, the Webster Hall.
You must have been just pumped with this adrenaline.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, New York got a great show that night because I was really excited about it. I was really happy. I was really proud of myself because it's really hard to do that. A couple of the other poets who were much more experienced than me ran out of time. And so you have like the producer, Stan Latham, who's just an amazing human being. I'm still friends with him today. You hear him come over like the voice of God. You know, he's like, you ran out of time. Cut. You do it again. And she's like, she's crying and, you know, they're getting her back together. And then she does it again. And, you know, they should have put a clock up there. You know, that's what they should have done. So you know how much time you have left. And so because they tell you don't stop for applause. So even when I get like a round of applause, you just keep talking because you don't want to get cut off. I don't want to do that whole thing over again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's like a one-time thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I can only imagine what you go through. Like, what are you thinking about? And because you even like talk about it with just performing with OTEP. Mm-hmm. Like you kind of relive those moments.
Yeah.
I thought I could merge the two. It was painful. It was a painful breakup. So painful that I didn't speak to you or Mitch or anybody for 6 years. And unfortunately, the reason we did come back together was Mitch's passing. Still regret that very much. I'd reached out to him because a few months before he passed, he was injured. Go figure, right?
Oh, yeah, his name was, you're right.
Fell on stage or something. I don't know what happened, but I'd seen like something on Lambgoat. I was like, oh dear, I better reach out to him. It's been long enough. And so I messaged him. I think it was on Facebook. He never messaged back. And then a few months later I didn't see anything. Pat called me, our buddy Pat, old friend Pat Ramirez, called me at work and told me the news. And then I saw you that night outside of John's tattoo shop. And we embraced, we cried hard, cried ugly, and really weird because, you know, never thought that would be the moment we'd reconnect.
At a vigil. No. Or is that, did I pronounce that right? A vigil?
Yeah, right, at a vigil. It goes to show, you know, don't wait, don't hesitate. Looking back, all of those things are so incredibly petty. Water under the bridge, you know, and don't take for granted the opportunity to apologize, recognize your faults, recognize where you could have been a better person, and, you know, don't ever get to a position where, you know, you regret making that phone call or driving out to see somebody and just saying, hope you're okay. You don't have to be best friends. We wouldn't have been. But
yeah,
just to have the opportunity to check in and say, you know, I'm glad that you're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a rough time because, and it's kind of funny and interesting to hear Rick talk about your like departure, because for me it was personal, but I don't think it was personal because like it's like it's like you're being abandoned, even though if the decision is right, you're like why is Rick leaving?
Mm-hmm. You know, you felt like he abandoned.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that was like a weird, even though like you eventually came back and did Mitch's memorial, which at that point might have been 7 years.
It was a long time. Hadn't spoken to any of you guys.
We haven't spoken in 6, maybe 8 years. It was nuts. And
I never thought that, I never ever once looked back. You know, I wasn't playing heavy music. I was going to school. I was in Northern California. I think Josh, you called me, somehow got my number because my number had changed several times. And I thought that was pretty mind-blowing because Mitch had passed. And kind of at the drop of a hat, the call's happening. And then I think it was just 2 weeks later that, you know, I don't really recall how much time had passed between that call and then the actual memorial service. But that was,
It's weird when, you know, you're, yeah.
No, even then when we got together, obviously, you know, things were chaotic because Mitch is no longer alive. But it, in my mind, that time was also chaotic because, you know, we hadn't talked in a long time. And it's not like we all of a sudden just were like, oh, you know, best friend. Yeah, it wasn't like that. It was like, I got to learn the music again. Mitch had passed. Everyone's kind of got, you know, lots of things that they're contemplating. Yeah, that was when we all reunited for that. So,
and at that point, you know, because I mean, when you're a kid playing music, it's just like you become close and good friends, and you know, at that point, it's personal because to me, it's all of me, Rick's becoming one of my best friends. We're gonna travel the world together and all this. So when you leave, it's like, even though for you it's very natural, it was like kind of in the back of my head, you know, it's like, well, shit sucks.
Well, yeah, I never, yeah, it's, yeah, again, in my mind, I was, you're like, was that a rough time? You know, was there animosity? I'm like, no, I was just leaving. And in Chris's mind, you're sharing. Yeah. So yeah, funny. Never knew that.
And Josh was even worse because, I mean, Josh definitely, like, you were one of my best friends at that point, you know. It's like it was you, you, Mitch, David Ingram, tried to help. Like these, like I have, like, you know, you only have a few, you know. It's like once you're leaving, it's like what? It's like, yeah, no, we didn't talk. You know, I lost one of my best friends, you know, and then, you know, we don't talk for 6 fucking years. We go from like, yeah, we're buddies, and then you don't talk or even see someone for years.
Co-workers, family, friends, the homies, yeah. You know?
It's probably terrible for, I mean, all, at both sides, you know?
Well, sure. Again, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's hard. Most bands, at least in our experience, in our, you know, little musical world, most bands start as friends. Mm-hmm. And so the tension that's created between friendships mingling with musicianship, mingling with writing, and then the schedule and competing time, competing interest.
A new member joining, like a manager, you know, that there's new dynamics that get introduced.
Yeah. And again, Jerry was in the right in terms of, I think he saw the potential, and he was that hand, the moving things forward, and knowing that if you guys wanted to be this, you needed to get someone who was all in, right? Was that? Oh, yes, exactly right. Yeah. He was the enforcer for sure. And it's, I think, if anything, it's advice from people to learn from, that sometimes there are very few things that are truly special that you don't sacrifice for. There's always an element of sacrifice, no matter what. And it's about establishing, sometimes it's a harder journey than not, but it's establishing your values, your personal values, and looking back in hindsight and appreciating, you know, your decisions, good or bad, but appreciating them for how they have molded you. You know, we're just pieces of wood gliding through the lathe of life, and little by little, those microscopic nicks shape us. Mark had even, I saw Mark at Chain Reaction, I think, a few months after the breakup, and he was so nice, and he was trying to reach out to me, and I shut him down. I was totally mean to him. Sorry,
how long ago was that?
Well, this is, like 2006.
Okay.
So shortly after the breakup.
Got it. It wasn't clear to me.
So since then, of course, things have been patched up, and but again, it really revealed to me that, you know, a lot of that was me being the a-hole, you know. But again, you late teenagers, early 20s.
Come on, man. It's tough. So you've done acid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
How does that, okay. So you're talking to someone that's never done acid. Never done heroin.
So, that's good.
Okay.
Don't do heroin. It's a terrible drug.
Okay. What does that do for you, like, as far as, like your playing? Like, what? Like, does that,
like, when you're on acid?
So are you doing it? And then, like, okay, the next day, okay, I'm going to just riff. Like, what's that? How does that affect your playing and writing?
Well, you're definitely going to a different mental mindset, that's for sure. I mean, because I've played on acid before.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've had great experiences, and I have had terrible experiences. Absolutely. Like, there's a couple of times when I walking on stage, and it was, like, hitting me. And it felt like the guitar strings were just, like, stretching off of the neck, like a kind of like a piece of yarn, like an elastic, like you could just pull it off. And I was like, what the hell is happening? And like the stage lights felt like they were going through my body.
Back then, stage lights did. Those lights were so fucking
they were real light. They were actual hot.
Cans are so expensive. So hot.
Yeah. Damn, this light's going to my fucking body right now.
Bruce.
Yeah, weird shit happens. I don't recommend playing on acid in front of people.
Okay, we're definitely not going to advocate it.
I would like to,
but I'll try it.
But, advocate it 100%. Just not on stage.
Yeah, I would suggest sitting. Like, if you're in a good mood and you feel like writing some stuff, take some acid and see what happens.
Okay.
Don't try to do that in front of people when you're trying to do something responsible.
I'm sure you're in a crazy, like, other state of being, and you have other humans look at you. That sounds fucking weird. Like, I can't even smoke weed and play, because I could just, like, I probably freak out when, like, these humans are, like, they're, like, here, and they're in the same room, and they paid money, and they're, like, looking at us. It's weird. You know?
But, like, when I would take acid while I was playing, it was almost like I could only see half of the people. Like, from the chest down. Like, I couldn't really focus on anybody's faces. It was always just like a That's big good. Black cloud over everybody's heads. It was weird.
Wow. So, I mean, are you just trying to, like, compose yourself? It's like, okay, I'm going to play this riff, dude. Even though this is like a fucking shoestring.
Yeah, you know? Shit's falling off the neck. I don't know what's happening right now. But, yeah, I'm going to try and not freak myself out, you know?
What did you think happened after? I killed it.
I don't even think I realized I played after. I just kind of kept going.
Wow, that's a interesting way to... Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I just got off the stage, packed up all my stuff, and just kept going with the trip.
You just kept going?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, you didn't even process it.
Yeah.
You're wrapping a cable, and it just takes you like an hour.
That definitely happens.
Turns into a snake.
Turns into, yeah.
This is like a cable of life, dude.
Probably some weird shit like that happened, yeah.
What year is this, Jay? Is there a date on this?
What year? I think that's maybe 95?
96?
96, yeah. It was close.
I mean, just your state alone, it's just like a... Like the bands and the music coming up, but you have, like, you know, you guys, you have Slow and the Grain, like, what? And just has, like, the sound to it. It's like, I had to stop when I was driving up here. It's like, any band that came from there just hit chords differently. There's something to the voice that sound nothing like any other band, but even in their voice, there's just something to it. It's just different, you know? It's like, what was that?
Acid. Everybody taking drugs.
I'm trying not to laugh. I'm sorry. That's I'm not being professional right now.
I think it's just the attitude of the people down there. It's different than anywhere else.
You could choose how far deep you want to go into it.
Uh-huh.
But you went to South Africa and met with the shaman, correct?
Holy shit, I was like, wait, what the fuck are we talking about here for a second? And then I remembered the lore.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Okay, hit me with it. I need the reminder. Yeah.
Okay, so what did you think about on ayahuasca? And then at what point did any... I guess to...
I ain't never done ayahuasca. I was just fucking with you.
Are you serious?
Literally, 90% of the shit I was fucking saying on that tour, like, this sounded like a crazy-ass lore. I intentionally was like...
Because that's, but maybe not all of it. You got to bring it up. You got to bring it up.
You were, he was abducted by aliens.
Because some of it's true. Some of it.
You got me, dude. I fucking fuck you guys, dude.
Some of those stories are riddled with some truth.
I thought you were fucking serious.
No, hold up. So tell them about the DMT.
I've been on 12 minute pass fucking mom. I'm tired, yes, man. Yes, yes, I was like, let's go. Okay,
it wasn't
okay,
ayahuasca. Cool. It was close though. Close.
It wasn't ayahuasca. Fucking dick, dude. It was DMT. You know what I'm saying? And I had an experience meeting Creator. Is what I felt. So
okay,
and that actually was a real thing. Like I said, it's sprinkled with truth, but I just exaggerated the shit out of it. Nah, hey, bro, I did some fucking. I hit a point where I needed to see my own shaman. No, I'm being serious. I had to meet my own shaman.
Okay,
and have my own ceremony. Me and my wife went through the ceremony together. It was a beautiful experience. I learned a lot. How I feel from my experience, I found a new appreciation for life. Didn't last long, honestly. But it was something that was definitely detrimental to me actually giving a shit and continuing with music because I was done.
You were done.
Yeah, I was done, bro. I was done with everything.
That was about that time.
It was that time.
I already know.
I was done, bro. I was gonna be done with music. I wasn't gonna be doing this shit no more. I was gonna give the rest of these guys the 900 that we had in our account and call it a fucking day.
was thinking about getting rid of gear. Right
now. Wow. Yeah.
And I just hit a point where I needed a tune-up, and it definitely tune-up's tuned me up, good way bro. To say it.
A tune-up's a really good way to say it.
So yeah. Like I said, it's riddled with truth. Part of it is. I just told you in a funny-ass way.
I said, that motherfucker's never been to South Africa.
Hell no. Hell no. No,
I was like,
definitely not.
He said, damn, this is about to Austin be the deep part of the interview.
Austin's from South Africa.
Austin's from South Africa.
Say it right now. What's that song we listened to earlier?
You fucking idiots.
Oh, God.
Oh,
I love this.
Oh, that's great.
No. I don't know, man. You may hate us, but this is honestly us. 24 hours a fucking day.
No, this is great. This is your fucking band, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So would you contribute DMT to really... maybe like giving a new perspective. Like, okay, I love music. I'm not gonna fucking.
It helped with our riffs.
I was gonna say.
It definitely helped with me.
I feel like every musician is like, yeah, I'm gonna quit. I feel like once you're a musician, that's in your brain. Bro. There's no way, bro.
At that point in time, I was fucking.
You can take a break. You take a long ass hiatus.
That was the end of the band that shall not be named. So.
Yep.
And that's where that was.
I love that band.
Oh yeah.
Fuck that fucking band.
Darth band.
That band saved my life.
It saved my life. It's funny how you have a feeling, but someone else have a completely different feeling about that. That's funny, huh? That's life.
Yeah. It's kind of stupid. I wish we could all just see it as a fucking band for what it was and call it a fucking day. Fuck that shit.
Yeah. So Joe, you did you had a experience?
On accident.
On accident?
Twice on purpose, one on accident.
Say the accident first, because this is a fucked up ass story.
Accident,
God damn it.
Y'all were on tour. That was the OTM giveaway tour, right? You got home from?
That was because we started this week-long tour with one of my old metalcore bands. Here.
Fuck no.
Here.
Fuck no.
Hit it.
Fuck no. I'm going to light my own.
You want to hit it? Okay, no.
Then I shouldn't have tried. So
we went on this. We did this week-long run with D's old band. I was in a metalcore band. We took a car that did not have heat in the middle of winter time up to like Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So inside of the car was like 12 degrees, like constantly. Like we were dead sick. We were
like
driving on the road. I'm not even joking. Like consider just running the car off the road because that seemed like better than chilling and driving in that cold ass car.
And just
like
it was that cold.
Literally, it was that cold. But I just come home and I went to the dispensary. I was like, okay, I'm home. I'm going to get some weed. I'm going to chill. I had a gravity bong there that I made before I left. I got back and there's a new gravity bong,
a GB,
a different one. I'm like, cool, okay, maybe Evan. It was my homie Evan. Shout out,
Bastion.
I thought he just made a new gravity bong, so I was like, okay, cool. Let me pack a bowl. And I didn't know that that was a ceremony bong, gravity bong for doing DMT ceremonies.
Yes, sir.
And
you know where this is going.
Packed it, fucking took a fat rip,
crucial
blew
mistake,
it out, and then the lights hit, and it just went.
Could you
gone.
Fucking imagine?
Like, but I didn't know.
Can we look at this gravity bong for a minute? Let's talk about gravity bongs or drugs. That shit
but for the first
20 drugs.
Seconds, I'll say, gravity I thought I hit like meth or like just something because I didn't know what it was. And I was like, okay, that was not weed. Yeah. And then since I've done it before, I was like, that was DMT. That's not good. And I was sick, so I just like curled up in a ball on the couch for like 20 minutes.
Pupils dropped
quick.
Mine was acid.
Yeah.
For sure. I fucked my head up on
that. That shit burnt a hole.
Yep.
A hole? Where?
In the brain.
Your brain?
Yeah. In the right place.
Yeah.
Is the medulla oblongata.
That's a long ass story.
No, that's just a lifetime of not a lifetime, but a time of doing drugs and then not doing drugs for so long. Yo, shout out being actually like really, really drug free, but still smoking hell.
It's cool to have good homies because I was doing coke a lot and I loved coke, but like one day I was in the apartment with like 10 homies. And everybody, like, one dude stood up off coke and he's like, yo, let's just stop doing coke. And everybody said, hooray.
Finally, someone said it.
Who would say that?
That actually, that's a real story.
Who would say that?
And I was like, hell yeah, all right. Same thing, like, we used to smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then Soto was like, yo, we're just going to quit. And then we did.
Me, him, and my wife, Emily, all three of us quit at the same fucking time, put the cigarettes down.
I hear that. Quitting cigarettes is one of the hardest things to give up. How did you do it?
I don't know, man.
Touchscreen vape.
You try to quit fast food?
Touchscreen vape.
Just swapping it for another vice.
I'm sorry. I'm probably still going to try and pass it to you.
Yeah, let me tell y'all something. The hardest shit to quit is like drinking. Like, soda is the worst drug there is.
That's the hardest thing to stop drinking, yeah.
Yep.
Caffeine.
Caffeine's tough.
Caffeine.
Fructose corn syrup.
Yep.
You got some Faygo?
So many right GMOs.
I want that purple stuff.
Yeah.
Trying to lean back, Soto. Yep.
Shout out, please, Free Devo.
Chris, you got it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Shout out, Chris.
Who?
Oh, yes. Shout out.
Debo?
Hair go crazy. Two. I fucks with that.
Yeah. For sure, bro. Fire.
Thank you.
Do you have many juggalos in here?
That the Faygos, dude.
Jesus.
Faygo is in the house, dude. Faygo is tastes good.
That's cool.
Literally
man.
Pure drugs. It's pure sugar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
First ingredient. Boom.
High fructose corn syrup. I heard they used to pair them up with a bottle of deodorant at the local grocery store.
I wish that was a thing.
I heard they stopped.
Is that a thing?
Oh, shit.
I don't want to believe anymore,
exactly,
dude.
Exactly.
I'm fucked up.
Why is there not ever this been a death metal band?
90% of it's probably going to be some bullshit.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine.
We'll tell you what's true. We'll tell you.
Exactly right.